Bickley and Murata mornings from 6 to 10.
Bickley and Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
Good morning and welcome.
To the world.
Dan Bickley.
Sports, man. Sports.
Vince Murata.
It's a power-packed morning zoo. Are you kidding me?
Bickley and Murata.
Spectacular.
This is the greatest show.
Bickley and Murata.
I love this show. This is the greatest show in the history of radio.
It's the greatest radio show ever.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Good morning. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jarrett Carlin, and Sarah the Ruthless together again in one place.
What could possibly go wrong?
Right, what could possibly go wrong? Look, I'm glad to have everybody back. I watched a basketball game last night, as you did, in Toronto with no fans, and I had post-traumatic stress disorder watching it.
I did, too.
I could not. I was almost violently ill watching the game. I'm like, ew, give me some beach volleyball. Give me some pro bowlers tour.
Give me something.
Give me something other than an empty arena.
Piped in crowd noise was weird again, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I got to look. I'm never going to rip one of my PA announcing brethren in the NBA.
Yeah.
That guy was laying it out on the line last night. With no fans in the arena, he was going all out.
Uh-huh.
Which, I don't know why, but good for him. The energy was very high.
I think you notice that stuff because you do that job. I don't ever notice that stuff. Ever.
I saw a tweet last night that said, at one point in the game, he could be heard saying, please join me in congratulating Fred VanVleet, the Eastern Conference player.
Please join me.
Who's joining you?
Yeah, who's joining
the
you?
The inflatable dinosaur?
Yeah, right. Right.
It was weird.
Yeah, it was very, very bizarre.
And then
bizarre.
The game followed suit, but the bottom line is this.
Right.
When it's played in an empty arena with no fans, you can't beat the Phoenix Suns.
Wow. Wow, that's actually been almost proven to be true.
Now, we'll just overlook the beginning of last season where they had some losses with no fans.
Whoops. Right, right. Let's forget about that. Right, exactly.
Oh, yeah, man. That's always so wild to me to think that the bubble was not last season. It was the season before last season.
Right.
Yeah, we're in our...
Hence the post-traumatic stress that I was dealing with last night watching that, right? And the minute you mention anything about that, how soon does it take for people to go political on you?
Oh, my goodness. I tweeted about it.
I'm telling you.
It's tough to watch a game with no fans in early 2022. There's no agenda there. There's no stance on vaccinations or boosters or belief in a pandemic. Or any, I was just saying
nothing.
It was weird.
Right.
It was
There's just nothing. Weird. Right.
Yeah.
You'll get triggered, man.
Yeah.
Careful, Vinny. All right.
One of the responses I got was, it's tough to read your tweets at any time of the year.
Unfollow.
Exactly.
Right.
I have a feeling a person like you has a tough time reading anything.
That's something I would say. That's something I would replay to Luke.
Right. Exactly. How are you feeling today, Jarrett? Wednesdays are generally your Achilles heel. Are you all right today?
Wednesdays always feel like they should be Thursdays to me. Uh-huh. I don't know why. But I never can believe we're only on Wednesday when we're on Wednesday.
Sarah and I noticed there's a special kind of dragon ass that you do on Wednesday. A special brand of it. You can see it in your walk, in your demeanor. There's a special brand
I noticed
brand
it,
of it
too. Yeah. Right before our show meeting, Jarrett walks over to the printer. And Jarrett, I'll say this, he walks with a confidence. He walks with a swagger and a pace.
He throws his head back when he walks.
And man, he was going slow.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's Wednesday. Yeah. That's the mark of Wednesdays.
The feet were propelling him. Nothing else was moving.
Well, if I'm gonna be a dragon ass, I'm gonna be like the ass of a dragon instead.
Oh, I like
shooting
that.
Shooting fire today.
I like that. Okay.
Into a jar.
That's good.
Keep that door closed.
Yeah, let's not call this off. Start the show, Ferret.
The Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Yeah, we start the Splash for Wednesday. The Phoenix Suns began a road trip last night that will keep them away from Footprint Center for a while. First stop, Toronto, an empty arena at the Scotiabank Arena in Ontario. Raptors had won their last six, but it was the Suns who came out on top of an uneven but close game, 99-95. Suns fell behind by double digits in the first half, but it was Jay Crowder in his second game back from his stay in the league's health and safety protocols kept them close with 16 first-half points, including 4 3-pointers. Suns trailed by 2 heading into the fourth, but got balanced scoring and held Toronto to 28% shooting in the final frame to win it by 4, despite the fact that they couldn't grab a defensive rebound to save their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Devin Booker had a tough shooting night, but hit a 19-footer with just over a minute to play that gave the Suns a 1-point lead that they would not give up. Phoenix now 31-9 on the season, and they move on to take on Indiana on Friday.
And I know we'll talk about this later. There, at last night's game, and again, I'm really trying in this basketball season to stay very, very steady in my approach to regular season vagaries and bad performances and good performances and keep them in the context they deserve. But I'm getting a little weirded out by this team's now, this growing deficiency of rebounding. This growing deficiency, and it didn't start in Boston, but that game in Boston, even though the Suns were shorthanded, that there was too much bully ball being played against the Suns, and they need to get this situation under wraps.
Yes. 22 offensive rebounds, including 9 by Chris Boucher last night, many of them in the second half. Although those 22 offensive rebounds turning into only 16 second chance points for Toronto. So good job of them
defense,
by hitting the glass.
Right.
But also Toronto failed on some opportunities. We'll get more into the Suns. Oh, who also made it official yesterday after wide rumors that it would happen. They signed big man Bismack Biyombo for the rest of the season. Biyombo did play last night, 5 rebounds in under 5 minutes of playing time in the first half in last night's win in Toronto. And the Suns once again atop the league with the best record. Memphis remained red hot. They beat the Golden State Warriors 116-108 for their 10th straight win. Ja Morant, 29 points, 8 assists for the Grizz. Golden State falls to 30-10 on the season.
Yeah, that guy is fast becoming one of the best shows in basketball. Yeah, he's just so fun to watch.
And they're starting to become a legit contender.
They're
the Suns. That's
really
one of the
good
teams now you have to look for.
Yeah, and last time they faced, it was the Ja Morant show last time they faced each other. We didn't talk about it. I'm sure you saw it. The block shot against the Lakers.
It was insane. I've
never seen anything like that. He did it in college, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are times in the NBA when you get blown away by certain athletes' leaping abilities. That play was one of those. That dude is flying. He's not jumping.
Yes.
He's flying.
That, to me, is in the same category as the Tom Chambers dunk over Mark Jackson back in the day.
Right.
Where you just watch it 100 times and you think, how did that just happen?
Right. How did that happen?
Yeah. Arizona Cardinals still 5 days away from their playoff showdown with the Rams on Monday night. But again, more potential good news for the defense. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler put it out there that the Cardinals are hopeful that defensive end J.J. Watt can begin practicing tomorrow, which would give him a chance to play on Monday night. Late last week, the Cardinals designated Watt for a return to practice, opening his 21-day window to do so. Of course, he hasn't played since injuring his shoulder in Week 7. This season, Watt, 16 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, and a sack for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and hopefully this is going to do exactly what we've talked about. Hopefully it's going to inspire. Hopefully it's going to bring a better level of energy. I don't think that's going to be an issue in a playoff game, but I do think it's a little extra something the Cardinals can hang their hat on, Vinny.
Cardinals also have more reported job candidates for openings around the league. Reports stating defensive coordinator Vance Joseph is on the Miami Dolphins list of head coaching candidates to interview. After they fired Brian Flores, Joseph has prior head coaching experience in Denver and was Miami's defensive coordinator for a year in 2016. And in addition to Adrian Wilson being on the Giants GM radar, so is VP of player personnel Quentin Harris. So he could get an interview as well. Speaking of the Giants, they molded over for a day, ended up firing and battled head coach Joe Judge after just 2 seasons on the job. They were 4-13. But much, much worse than that.
That's very, very true. I thought that was very odd that generally that kind of stuff takes place on Monday. That's why they call it Black Monday.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that deal went into Tuesday and the Giants hadn't made up their mind, that's very, very odd to me.
Yep. ASU football welcoming a running back to the program through the transfer portal, former Wyoming running back Xavien Valladay. How great of a name is that for a running back, by the way?
Yes.
I made the announcement on social media last night. He played 4 seasons at Wyoming, 2 1,000-yard seasons on his resume, and he's now in a position group that includes returner Daniel Ngata and incoming freshman Tevin White. Coyotes conclude their four-game homestand tonight against the Maple Leafs at Gila River Arena. Yotes 1-2 so far at home. They took a 4-2 loss to Nashville their last time out. Toronto skates in with 49 points, fourth best in the Eastern Conference. 8 o'clock is the faceoff. 7:30 pregame here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It's also on a national television basis on TNT. And upsets last night in college basketball. There are no more undefeated teams. Texas Tech knocked off top-ranked Baylor 65-62. That ends the Bears' 21-game winning streak. And the only other unbeaten team, USC,
yeah,
they fell to Stanford last night 75-69.
Wow.
Parody okay. in college
yeah.
basketball.
Yeah. Right.
I just find it hard. There's actual college basketball going on everywhere else outside of the state of Arizona.
That's exactly right.
There you go. There's your splash for Wednesday, January 12th. Coming up next, J.J. Watt. Will it be a boost for the Cardinals? Will we see it at all? We'll get into all of it next as we get closer to playoff football for the Arizona Cardinals. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings live from the Ok Chin Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Cardinals championship chase coverage presented by 72 Souls on the home of Arizona Cardinals football. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata talk cards in the playoffs. Now.
Yeah, JJ obviously commands a lot of respect. I mean, when he's around, guys perk up. His energy, his leadership is tremendous, and he's worked really hard to try and get back. Not sure if he'll be all the way or not back, but just the effort that he's put in, it's been tremendous to watch.
Yeah, it's Cliff Kingsbury on with Wolf and Luke on Monday here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. J.J. Watt, we thought, you know, it might be possible. At first, it wasn't possible.
Mm.
When J.J. Watt's injury was reported, I think there was a level of surprise. Wow, he walked off the field after a win over his former team. You know, the pictures of it, I can still see the picture in my mind of him walking off the field with DeAndre Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
Like two former Texans relishing the win over the former team. J.J. Watt played well, had an impact on that game. And then you hear the report of, like, 18 different injuries to that shoulder. And like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
But when it was initially reported, hey, J.J. Watt, season-ending surgery, and then the seed was planted. He's working hard. We know about his maniacal work habits. You joked about it earlier in the week about him, the video of him beating up the goalpost,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
You know, this is becoming more and more, not possible, but likely, because, you know, the reports are out there from Jeremy Fowler. J.J. Watt could return to practice on a full-time basis tomorrow for the Cardinals.
I was thinking about that because I know Gambo brought this up months ago. Shortly after J.J. Watt had surgery, Gambo learned that J.J. Watt was targeting a return in the postseason. And yet when it was announced that he was in that on that window designated to return, people were like shocked by it, even though we knew this was a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of tells me that I think there was a lot of skepticism in regards to whether or not he was actually going to do it. Now, that injury that he suffered and that surgery that he underwent generally is, 4 to 6 months recovery?
Mm-hmm.
Monday night, I think, will be 12, just over 11 weeks.
Well, that injury took place, or those injuries took place on October 24th
in
that game.
Yeah, against the Texans. And so that is very much quicker than I think most people anticipated.
Yeah, about a month ahead of schedule.
And I think that J.J. Watt's probably thinking, hey, if I hurt this further, so what? I've got the offseason to rehab. But I think what he's doing is very, very, very cool and very studly, and I think the Cardinals are going to be properly inspired by it.
I think so as well. But you have to ask yourself that question. Cliff Kingsbury said earlier in this week, you know, about the disappointing loss to end the season, and we know what was on the line. As things shook out simultaneously on Sunday, the Arizona Cardinals had a chance to win a football game and win a division title, and they did not take advantage of that.
No.
Whether it was just their own failings, not monitoring what was going on in Los Angeles, whatever. But he also said, yeah, I expect increased urgency is basically what he said. And we've heard that a lot this year in the second
Way
half of the
much.
Season. You know, we got to get back to, you know, being urgent. And I think it's fair to question whether or not that's a switch that can be flipped by this team because it has popped up so often. When you talk about having urgency, at some point you got to stop talking about urgency and you just have to display urgency.
Right, exactly. It's not something you should have to summon. And that's what worries me about this football team. Why does that happen and where does that come from? And I was kind of afraid of it going into the Seahawks game because I've grown to not trust the Cardinals' approach on game day. You don't know what level of intensity you're going to get from this team. And too often, they don't meet the other team's intensity.
Weren't you hoping, though, that that performance in Dallas was like, okay, finally they got like back on track here. They realize the stakes. They see the playoffs and they're like, okay, we're fine. That's why it was doubly disappointing to follow that up with another flat performance. Like, oh, I thought we figured this out. Come on, guys.
Right.
And we might very well get proof that this is two different football teams.
Yeah.
This is the road Arizona Cardinals and not the home Arizona Cardinals because you got 9 games of proof that they can really take care of their business when they're not at home, and 5 straight at home, which is just mind-boggling again when you think about it, that they're not a very good home team.
Yeah, and that's mind-boggling in and of itself because I know that in some places, like, and I'm not making this up purely a head coach issue, but I know that there's head coaches like Bruce Arians, whom if you were in a 5-game losing streak at home, he would be throwing furniture. He would be, like, screaming at you, this has to stop. We do not lose home games like this. And there just doesn't seem to be any of that. I thought after the game on Sunday, I thought it was really interesting how both Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury kind of scoffed at how bad they've been at home. Just sort of, like, self-loathing. Like, this is really ridiculous what we put on the field here at home.
Well, and it also brings up the repeated questions of motivation, where it comes from. And I know, Wolf will preach this. It's not up to the head coach to get players motivated.
But it is.
And I do, basically believe in that. But when things are going wrong, it doesn't matter what you do for a living. It is up to you to have the proper motivation to do that job. And I think people can relate to this. When you get that positive motivation from your superiors, doesn't that renew you a little bit?
I would think so. But I think the issue is more of the opposite, that there's just not that fear of I've got to be on this at all times, or I'm going to get exposed, or I'm going to get yelled at, or this, because I don't think that's Cliff's nature. And to Cliff's credit, he doesn't try to be somebody he isn't. But this is something I've been saying this for 3 years when it comes to football players, and I had a discussion with a couple of friends yesterday. You name for me one really successful NFL head coach who didn't have some jerk in him. Name one. Can you do it? I don't think you can. Because
Dick Tony Dungy.
Yeah, there
Dick
you
Vermeil?
Go. Maybe Tony Dungy. But so to me, this is, and it's, you don't have to be that, but I think what it says about this sport is there has to be a level of fear from your boss in football because it is such a hard sport to play. It is so hard on you physical. I hear Wolf talk about that, but Wolf is coming from a completely different perspective. Wolf is a self-starter. Wolf never had to be motivated to play football. He would have played the game for free. So his mindset, the way he looks at the game, is a product of who he is and who he was as a player. Not everybody is built like that. There are football players. You watch Josh Allen play. Josh Allen loves putting his face in the fan. There's a lot. Kyler Murray does. That's not Kyler Murray's game, right?
I wonder if he does that Luke, I'm your father thing when he puts his face
in the fan.
Yeah.
Like from Tommy
right,
Boy.
Right, right. So that, and that to me has always been one of the most fascinating things about the NFL is that you've got this wide variety of motivation level in on a football field at any given time. You got guys who live and crave the violence, and you got guys who can deal with it, can absorb it, don't necessarily dig it, and then you got guys who are like, oh, I just got to get out of here in one piece. And it's a big mix of that. And so I think what I'm trying to get at here is the lack of urgency that's shown up with this football team. There's something amiss here for this to be happening. Just like losing five home games, there's something amiss. It might not be serious. It might not prevent them from making a long playoff run, but let's hope a different Cardinals team takes the field on Monday and sustains that.
You can text your thoughts on that to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, the Phoenix Suns' best players aren't exactly dominating out there, but they're finding ways to win, and they got one in a weird game in Toronto last night. We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
It's one of the weirdest games I've ever played in. I mean, it was different than the bubble because it just was. I mean, we kind of knew what we were getting into. This was weird with that big of a venue, having played in all the venues we played in, then to come here and have no fans. It was quiet, cold. It was just weird. And we just had to figure out a way to win, you know. That was a good way to start this road trip, to win in that fashion, but that was a different game. Even coming out, like, I'm used to being here and coming out and getting harassed by the fans, especially the people at the on the front row by the bench. And I'm just grateful that our guys continue to figure out different ways to win games.
That's exactly what the Suns did last night. Monty Williams, the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, playing in an empty Scotiabank Arena in Toronto. They figured out a way to win, 99-95 over the Toronto Raptors. And when you wipe away the ingredients and all of the appearances of that game and how strange it was, that's a good win for the Suns, because Toronto had been playing very well. They have one of the, you know, the hottest players in the league right now, at Fred VanVleet, who started out like a house on fire and cooled off as the game went on. And the Suns did not play close to a perfect game. They didn't play a good game, really, in a lot of facets, but they figured out a way to win, and that's big.
It's funny you should say that, because I had conflicting feelings about the game right after I watched it, because there was the rebounding issue that really upset me during the game.
Mm-hmm.
There was another very, very lackadaisical performance from DeAndre Ayton, who I'm starting to get very anxious about all over again. And yet by the end of it, I thought, wow, that's good that they were able to kind of muscle up and take that game and win that game. And once again, Chris Paul making plays, Devin Booker again not shooting the ball well, but made a really big shot. You saw a little attitude from Devin Booker towards the Raptors mascot, which was very, very comical.
Yes.
Right. And I thought what the team was missing, Jay Crowder got on the court and got everybody kind of where they needed to be to win that game.
They did. Let's start with the Ayton subject.
Okay.
I defend DeAndre Ayton a lot. The lack of activity was hard to defend in the first half. Now, he only got two shots, but played 12 minutes and 48 seconds, had 4 points. And one rebound, and you didn't really notice DeAndre Ayton out there.
No.
His teammates noticed DeAndre Ayton, and apparently, according to Devin Booker, they let him know about it in the halftime break.
I mean, as a team, we just communicate. You know, we let him know at halftime, and that was said, you have one rebound. And, you know, he took it like a man, and he went out there, and he was more physical. So, you know, that's what we pride ourselves on as a team, is, you know, not taking stuff too personal. And, you know, we know we're not giving our all. That's what we have teammates for, to come in and let us know. So, you know, it's the same way, vice versa. You can come to me and say the same thing.
And it wasn't dominant DeAndre Ayton in the second half, but much better. Acceptable. 12 points, 8 rebounds, hit some big free throws, had the biggest rebound of the game.
He did.
Late in the final stretches. But, again, I could see the frustration where, okay, it's his second game back. But DeAndre Ayton was pretty adamant, too, that he didn't have any symptoms when he was out with COVID.
Right.
He felt like he was just on the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
It's still hard to do anything when you're in quarantine. I get it. But I wouldn't have guessed that was the issue watching him play these last two games against Miami and Toronto.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I just think he's looked he's looked low energy. And I think Jared brought up something, not to bring you into this conversation if you don't want to say this on the air, but I think you're right. When DA kind of, when his conditioning slips just a little bit, you notice it.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if he does not want to leave the court in terms of jumping and exerting himself. And it's the fact that this team had to get in him again at halftime is what kind of bothers me, because I think maybe it was erroneous for any of us to think, okay, this prove it year contractually, this not rewarding DA. I think a lot of us thought, oh, well, maybe this is going to light a fire. Maybe he is going to be a fire breathing dragon, right? Like you are this morning, Jarrett.
That's right.
You're going to be a dragon's ass this morning.
Something like that.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So,
Jarrett, the ass dragon Carlin.
That's good.
He's writing that one down.
Yeah, right, he is. So to me, this is something that, but again, the Suns obviously are on top of this, and they obviously got into him at halftime, and once again, to his credit, he's very receptive of that stuff. So at least there's that.
There is that, and Booker made reference to that as well. Hey, we don't take anything too personal, and good teams communicate, and they're able to feed off that communication.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the Devin Booker question.
Okay.
Devin Booker has not shot well in his last three games. 4 for 13 last night, 2 for 7. He did have a gigantic jumper in the last minute of the game that he hit. But over his last three games, Devin Booker is shooting 28% from the floor, 26% from three-point range. He has not missed time. This is one of those downswings that you see in a long season. Mm-hmm. It's just weird that it was coming at a time where it looked like Devin Booker crossed over into a new threshold in terms of his three-point shooting especially, but
yeah,
was consistently scoring. The fact is, he has not played well in the last three games, and the Suns are 2-1 in those three games.
Well, yes, that is true. And it's coming at a bad time because even Kendall Jenner is lobbying for him for All-Star votes, in which he's lagging behind. So in terms of that, this is not the good time to be slumping. But like you said, it's just a valley in the season. And the level of long-term concern with Devin Booker is minimal.
Yeah. Monty Williams also talked about something that they're trying to figure out now. And there's been, okay, absences. You bring in a bunch of new players. And some of those players have played rotation minutes. Now you get those players that were missing back. And there's a lot of moving parts. Monty admitted to that. Still trying to figure things out in terms of personnel.
Yeah, we're still feeling it out when you have these many guys playing in different spots. It was a lot tougher tonight. We typically use our rotation chart and use it as a template and then go off of field. Tonight we just went off of field. I put Biz in there early just to get some juice, get us some energy, put some pressure on the rim. And I thought he did a decent job. Other than the charge he got, from a rotation standpoint, we're still trying to figure it out, but I think everybody is. You know, they were missing a few of their key guys tonight, and Siakam played 39 minutes, I think. Mikal played 40. That's typically not something we want him to do. Van Fleet, I think he leads the league in minutes. He played 43. So I think we're all dealing with it.
To the Biombo point, when the Suns were really struggling, and it's frustrating to watch. When you're a fan of a basketball team, one of the most frustrating things that you can sit through is just this run where you can't get a rebound.
Right.
And the Suns could not get a defensive rebound last night. It was
so
to the point where, I know I got a little heated watching that.
Yeah.
I think some of the players on the court were getting a little bit heated watching what was happening.
Yeah.
But again, this is what good teams do. They win basketball games when they are far less than their best.
Than optimal. Yeah, I know you're right about that. I thought in listening to Monty Williams talk about the bench, I thought Jalen Smith, for the first time coming off the bench, had a comfort level to him in a reserve role. Now, we all know what he did when he was forced to start, and he did very, very well. But in back into a role that is really going to be the only role that's going to be available for him, I thought he looked comfortable last night, and he contributed a little bit. And I also thought it was interesting after the game that Monty Williams basically He kind of confirmed what you brought up the other day, and that is he should not have been playing Cam Johnson at the end of that blowout loss to Miami, and he took the blame for it.
Yeah, and that's another thing that he'll have to deal with now when Cam Johnson comes back, and we don't have any timetable on his return, and he's on the trip, which is a good sign. But Cam Johnson was playing at his highest level as an NBA player consistently, and a lot of that had to do with the increased minutes he was getting as a starter. And now you got another rotation question to answer when he comes back. Jay Crowder, he deserves a ton of credit for what he did last night. He admitted to Eddie Johnson and Tom Leander after the game, my conditioning still isn't there. I'm still dealing with some stuff. He admitted to having some COVID symptoms and was pretty sick for a while. But right when it looked early like Toronto was going to stamp that game, this is ours, sorry, there's nothing you can do about it, early in that game, Jay Crowder kept him in the game. He was red hot from three-point range. And he was kind of a motivating factor down the stretch. He deserves a lot of credit for that win last night.
Yeah, no, I think he was a dude that wasn't having any of that lethargy, and I agree. For a guy that did suffer with mm-hmm. symptoms during his bout with COVID-19, I thought he was very he was Jay Crowder. He was very aggressive. He brought the aggression that some of his teammates were lacking, and I think he was one of the stars of the game. Yeah, yep. I'm with you on that.
Suns win it despite scoring under 100 points. That doesn't happen a lot. 99-95, they are 31-9 and moving on to Indiana to take on the Pacers on Friday. Later on in the show, we'll talk to Al McCoy as he'll join us for Al About the Suns. That's coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Coming up next, lots of pressure at this time of the year in the NFL, focusing on Rams, Cardinals. Where does most of the pressure lie? We'll get into that discussion next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Cardinals championship chase coverage presented by 72 Soul on the home of Arizona Cardinals football. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata talk cards in the playoffs. Now.
I look at Matthew Stafford kind of like a golfer in the woods. When he gets in trouble, you know, he could punch out to the fairway and maybe throw the ball away, but you don't see that a lot with Matthew Stafford. You see him sort of look for to thread it through the trees. And he's got that kind of trust in his arm. And if you think about where he was weaned and how he was weaned, and you know, you think about not winning the big game, I don't really buy into that. I do buy into the fact that he was at Detroit for so long, but he, you know, he had Calvin Johnson there, so he had the luxury of throwing up the 50-50 ball.
Sam Farmer, LA Times, he joined us yesterday. Gotta love the Matt Stafford, Roy Tin Cup McAvoy.
Phil Mickelson analogy? Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, I love that. I thought that was so well done because I think that's really that's kind of a lot of the mistakes that Matthew Stafford makes. They're not necessarily bad passes, they're bad decisions. Mm-hmm. Thinking he can get the ball somewhere. Carson Palmer had the same thing.
Brett Favre to a large degree for much of his career had that.
Yeah. You remember that? I remember that game where Carson Palmer had two interceptions in the first quarter. And then he threw the ball in the most impossibly tight window after that.
Yeah.
And you're like, how do you do that? How do you forget that you've got two interceptions already in your back pocket and you're not out of the first quarter yet? But, because when you've got that kind of arm talent, that's what you do.
But this is fascinating because you heard the sound or the music that was playing in the background there. It was Under Pressure. We had this discussion about pressure, where it lies going into this game. And I was pretty adamant about the pressure. Most of it going into this game, if you're going to slice up the pressure pie, if you will, the biggest slice would go to Matthew Stafford. I mean, let's look at the principles in this play, if you will. Sean McVay, he's got a division champion. He is a head coach that has guided his team to the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Now, his Super Bowl offensive experience, he got exploited by Bill Belichick in that Super Bowl. So there is some pressure on him. Kyler Murray, yes, there's pressure because you are the savior of this franchise. You're the franchise quarterback. That's built in. It's his first playoff game. Same can be said for Cliff Kingsbury, head coach, built-in pressure. Matthew Stafford was targeted by the Rams as the piece to put them over the top.
Yep. Yes, he was.
And he has not won a playoff game yet.
No, he has not. And so that obviously is a big narrative. The question becomes, what does Matthew Stafford do with that pressure? I do agree with you. I think the pressure is obviously there, and I think it's the biggest. Out of all the quarterbacks in the playoffs, I think you could make a case that there's more pressure on Matthew Stafford than anybody. And there's pressure on a lot of guys. But Matthew Stafford, as you pointed out, was traded for to be that difference maker. To do what Jared Goff could not do. Jared Goff got the Rams the Super Bowl, so I should amend that. But he was brought in to win this game on Monday and then more games after that. And so that pressure is going to be there. And I would think he's going to feel it. The question is, does it limit him or does it make him even better?
On what you're talking about, I saw somebody point out that in the game last Sunday, the 49ers versus the Rams. The Rams.
Kudos on saying versus, Jared. Well
of
done.
Of course, of course. It's a new year. It's a new me. The Rams mortgaged their future to bring in this quarterback, Matthew Stafford. Uh-huh. The 49ers mortgaged their future to bring in a quarterback to replace Jimmy Garoppolo.
Uh-huh.
And Jimmy Garoppolo was the person who defeated Matthew Stafford yes. in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, because I was thinking about this. That end of that Rams 49ers game, Jimmy Garoppolo, no matter what you think of him, stepped up and delivered for the 49ers. And that's what you ask a franchise quarterback to do. And not everybody can do it. He delivered a touchdown on command when his team needed it, or they were not going to be in the playoffs.
It's true.
It was almost a fait accompli that the 49ers were moving off of Jimmy Garoppolo after this year and moving on to Trey Lance. What if he leads? What if he upsets the Cowboys? What are you going to do then?
It's not like Trey Lance showed a ton this year.
No, he didn't. He had a couple of opportunities. Yeah. But on the flip side of that equation that Jarrett laid out there, Matthew Stafford, who was brilliant in the first half and then talked about the crowd getting to him, the home crowd getting to him in the second half, he still got a lot of credit from his head coach, Sean McVay.
He's played in playoff games. You know, we'll talk about what we think it's going to take to go win the football game. But, you know, I really thought he was trying to will us to victory yesterday. I thought he made some incredible throws. I thought he was outstanding on third down. You know, there was a lot of really big time, you know, that drive to put us up 24-17. I mean, you just talk about the location, the toughness, the ability to stand in there and make some of those plays. So, we'll go about it the same way, Lindsay, but, you know, I think it was his first division that he won yesterday as well. And he certainly was as instrumental as anybody in helping lead us to 12 wins.
Yeah. I mean, you can give credit to Matthew Stafford for being the quarterback of a division champion. It's not like he won the game to do it.
No.
And what Sean McVay hit on there with Matthew Stafford, this is all well known. Every single game, he will make throws that will make your jaw drop. And mm-hmm. you'll think, wow, if this was consistent, look out.
Right.
What has been consistent in the second half of the season is that mixture of jaw-dropping throws and then head-scratching decisions on interceptions, most notably, that have been returned for touchdowns.
That's the thing. A lot of these interceptions that he has thrown, he was on a nasty streak of pick sixes. I believe it was four in the span of 5 weeks or mm-hmm. something like that. And those are throws that will really hurt you as a football team. Yeah, I'm really curious to see what this does, what this moment does to Matthew Stafford. Because the truly great quarterbacks, they will thrive on that kind of pressure. Now, Matthew Stafford has really not shown the ability to do that before, but again, it was in Detroit. And so this is the proving ground for him.
Yep. In terms of pressure for Cliff Kingsbury, obviously it's built in, as we talked about, and he's getting ready for something he's never experienced before. And he talked about that this week.
Just embrace the challenge. I mean, obviously we haven't been a part of that yet, but we played some really good football games and teams and have worked our way to this point. So it's about taking that next step and embracing it.
Look, the NFL playoffs are a fascinating process because you can see some individuals and some teams step to the forefront mm-hmm. and really embrace the challenge. It can also swallow you whole if you are not ready for it.
Yeah, it's true.
And we don't know. Nobody knows how ready the Arizona Cardinals are for this.
No, isn't that the truth? There is such a mystery as to what this team is really all about. It's alarming because at 10-2, I thought just the opposite. I thought they had graduated to a point where they could not get knocked off their mark. I really believe that. And what we've seen since then is anything but.
The level of that belief right after the Chicago game was at an all-time high, and you're thinking, wow. Kyler Murray came back after missing three games. They went 2-1 without him. They go to Chicago in his first game back, and it's cold and it's nasty. They can't really play the way they want to play,
and yet
they win the game in a sturdy fashion.
Uh-huh.
You're like, this team's infallible, young fella.
Right.
That was this season's post-Hail Murray moment. And then the rest of the season was the post-Hail Murray. It
was a lot less dramatic, but right. There's a lot of comparisons.
But I mean, just like and how you felt about the team.
Yes.
And taking the entire season as a whole now, it feels a lot more like this season was just a small, gradual step up from last season than that big turning the corner than that we thought sort of two-thirds of the way through.
Yeah, yeah. And as we're going to get into here relatively shortly, let's just hope that, that Kyler Murray's got a big surprise up his sleeve for the rest of the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the big storylines.
A fascinating discussion, too. We'll have it in a little bit. But coming up next, Suns get a win in Toronto last night somehow, some way. How did it sound? We'll let you know next. Suns in four. Bickley and Murata mornings live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.